Okay, we're going to start here at the bottom of Ayin Vav Amud Bet. We're just going to quickly chazer over the Gemara that we did yesterday because it's a lead-in to the Gemara today, which is How Gavra Dimitzamtzma L'Chiyuta D'Chavre B'Shimsha U'Meita. Person who somehow restricted the movement of his friend's animal, but he did it in such a way that he was stuck in the sun, and then the animal dies. Ravina Mechayev, Rav Acha Barav Patar. So machlokas amorayim about what the din should be. Ravina says you're chayav. Why? Ravina machayav kavachomer. Umarot say ach shelo asa bo shogeg kemezid. Vones kiratzon chayev bo etam mitzamtzeim. When it comes to murder, by murder we have distinctions between intent or intentionally or by accident, whether it was done willfully or if it was done unintentionally. Right there, even though we have those distinctions, yet we still are mechayev, like our Mishnah says, in a case of mitzamtzeim, in a case where you restrict the movement, and the restriction of movement by you causes the death. Nezakin shasab behen shogeg kemezid ones keratzon. In a case of nezakim, a case of damages, where the din is that shogeg and mezid ones keratzon does not matter what your intent is. Doesn't matter whether it's an accident or not an accident. You're always chayav because adam. Mu'ad li'olam. Adam is always held accountable, responsible for his actions, no matter whether he was intentional or not. So, enu din shechiev behem et mitzamtzeim. Certainly there by nezakin, it should be also a din that mitzamtzeim is chayav. So that's the kal v'chomer that Ravina lays out. Tosfos, we mentioned this yesterday, Tosfos points out that there is distinction in ones, the type of ones that is dome l'gneva, which is like really an ones that's really a mistake or something that you could not control, which is out of your control. For instance, if you went to sleep and then somebody put kelim there after you went to sleep and you knocked them off, then you'd be patur. There was no way you could anticipate. There's no reason to believe that you should be chayav. That's a complete ones. On the other hand, if it's an ones akarov la'aveda, an ones which is, it's a mistake, but it's more likely you lost something. Which there, you should be. It's a karov de pshia. If you were a little more careful, there's a possibility you could have stopped it. So that's similar to a case where you went to sleep and there were kelim near you. So when you went to sleep, of course you didn't intend to break them. Of course, if it happens in your sleep, you don't intend to break them. But when we went to sleep, they were there. And therefore, even though it's an accident, something that somewhat was preventable, and therefore in that type of onus, you're going to be chayav. So it says, don't take it as a blanket statement that nizakim are chayavin when it comes to onus. There's a distinction in the level of onus that's there. The other distinction that Tosfos makes is also by murder, we know that, and we're going to see this in today's daf, that when you shoot the murder weapon, there is the victim is protected. And then you later remove the protection, there you are patur. So bin Zakin, it should be the same thing. If you're comparing the Zakin, you should say the same thing, that for some reason when you did the action, you did not cause the problem, it only is a derivative of your action, you should be patur. So the example would be if you knock down your friend's wall, and then your friend's wall, and then his animal goes out and gets damaged. So over there, again, you're an indirect cause to the animal getting damaged. You should be patur. So Tosfos says, Ein hochanami. But the problem is that there's a Mishnah in Baba Kama that says that if you parvei together, lifnei b'mehem at chaveiro. So over there it says, you're patur midei adam b'chayav b'dinei shamayim. Then the Gemara goes through a whole case over there about if it's a kotel bari, if it's a good wall, then you should be chayav even b'dei adam. So that's against what Tosfos just said. So Tosfos makes a distinction between Aveda and Nizakin. When you knock down the wall and the animal then gets lost, that's a direct result of your action. On the other hand, if you knock down the wall and the animal goes out and then gets damaged, that's an indirectly caused by your action. And therefore, by Nizakin, you'd be Patur Midin Adam, B'chayav Yidrein Shemaim. On the other hand, by Aveda, you're going to be Chayav. So these are fine distinctions, but important distinctions about what you are assigned culpability for. Again, there's distinctions at the level of the onus, and there's also distinctions in whether it's aveda, which will be seen more as directly a result of your action, and the zakin, which are something that happens by, it has to be a third party or another object has to get involved before the damage happens, and therefore you will not be responsible.
Your actions are coincidental.
Right. I mean, you could be seen as causing it, but not directly, indirect causation, I would call it. Indirect causation. So now, that's the opinion of Ravina. Rav Acha Barav Poter. He says, no, you're patur in that case. What's my grandfather's, the reason for his position? The poter that he says you're patur makra, says, Mot yumat hamake rotzeachu. Rotzeachu dechayev lan mitzamtzeim, benizakin lo chayev lan mitzamtzeim. So that the pasuk is exclusionary, and it says rotzeachu, that the classification that we learned, the ribuy of O, to teach us mitzamtzeim, only applies to Rotzeach, the Parsha of Rotzeach, does not apply to the Parsha of Nizakim, and therefore Mitzamtzim by Nizakim is Patur. So that is, by Nizakim, we dealt with this case of Mitzamtzim, whether you're Chayav or not Chayav. Now we're going to have a series of memrot from Rava, which are, to be honest with you, very somewhat difficult memrot by Rava, that give distinctions or find distinctions when it comes to killing. When you are chayav and when you are patur. Many of them are very disturbing, I would say this, because you would think ethically, morally, that you'd want the person to be classified as a murderer in these instances. I'll just quote for you the Lashon HaRambam. The Rambam in all these instances says you are patur, but he says in each of these instances he calls the person a rotzeach. He's a murderer, but he's off on a technicality. I mean, technically, there's a halachic technicality which makes it that you are patur in these cases from dinei adam. You are still a murderer, and Rambam writes in each of these cases, rotzeachu vidoresh damim idrosh damav. Vidoresh damim, meaning a kodesh baruch hu will get him, meaning that he will be punished, and he will be, you know, held accountable for murdering these people, just that Beis Din cannot act upon it because of the halachic technicalities. So here we go. The first of these is Amar Rava. Kafato umeit berav patur. You tie someone up and they die from starvation, you are patur. Why? We'll see in a second. We'll compare it to some of the other cases and we'll see why. Vamarova, kafato bichama umeit, bitzina umeit, chayav. You tie him up in the sun and he dies from dehydration, tie him up in the cold and he dies from exposure, there you are chayav. Sof chama lavo. You tie him up in a location where the sun will eventually come, but it's not present now. Sof tzivan lavo. Or you tie him up in a location where he's warm now, but eventually he will end up being exposed. Patur. In that case, you are patur. So now, as Rashi points out, he makes a distinction. He says, okay, by Rav, when you tie him up and he starves to death, it's not the same as tying him up, in the, you know, instead of whether you hold him in the water and you keep him to drown, or in the fire, because there, as Rashi says, ha-horeg mizuman, the danger or the item that will kill him is currently present. Since it's currently present, you are held accountable, whether it's in the water and the fire in our Mishnah, over here, whether it's in the sun or the cold. If you tie him up in the sun or you tie him up in the cold, the item that will kill him is currently present. Since it's currently present, you are chayav, because the death has already begun. At that moment, the killing of the individual, the dehydration has begun from the moment you set him there. The exposure to the cold starts from the moment he is there because the danger or the item that will kill him is present. So you say to me, by Ra'av also, right? He's hungry right away. So you have to, it's a very, very fine distinction, but you're going to have to say by Ra'av, the death from starvation is something that takes time to kick in. Just because a person is hungry does not necessarily mean that they will die for starvation. Also, it takes a longer time, and the exposure will kill the person much in a much more expedient fashion. And whereas the rav will take time. So Tosfos says here, because of that, it must be afilo hayara ev kvar b'shat shekafato. If he's hungry already, then you tie him up. We don't consider the last time he ate a meal when you tie him up and he dies from starvation. It's considered indirect cause whether he ate a meal 10 minutes ago, or whether he made a meal, you know, 12 hours ago. Still considered indirect cause. Kevan, demaya mitchazek halav haraav lo haya meit. Because if the starvation did increase in its intensity, right, then he wouldn't have died. So the increasing in intensity is what makes him die, as opposed to the sun and the cold, where that item itself, the exposure at the current rate, is what will kill him. He has to remain there, meaning that the sun at its current intensity will kill him. It just, he has to stay there for him, you know, the sun, once he ties him up to it, that's what's killing him. By Rav, right, it's the increasing intensity of the starvation which is killing him. It's a very hard distinction to see why that should be the case, that it's, and there will be someone who argues on this position of Rava later on, because it seems that this is too fine a distinction to say that, and I would have thought to say that Rav is no different than son. When you tie him up, the starvation begins from that moment, just like the sun, the exposure to the sun begins from that moment. Rava sees a distinction, and we'll see later on that Rabbi Zera does not see that distinction, and therefore says you are chayav in that instance. Alright, so now, the next case is, Amar Rava kafato lifnei ari. He ties him up in front of a lion, patur. Lifnei yitushim, they call mosquitoes, he ties him up in front of mosquitoes, chayav. Ravashi Amar, afilu lifnei yitushim nami patur. Hani Azli, those that were there present when he tied him up left. Vahaniyatu, and it's their buddies that are there now. Alright, so now distinguish. Let's try to distinguish between a lion and a mosquitoes. Rashi claims the distinction is that by the lion, he says, Kavato lifnei ari, distinction is, Dilo nami aya kafot, lo yachol atzil atzmo min ari. If he wasn't tied up, he wouldn't have the ability to save himself from the lion. That the fact that the lion attacks him, right, should be his ability to escape the lion, right, is not affected by being tied up versus being free. The lion would have eaten him for dinner either way. He was there, he was present. Now the difficulty with Rashi's pshat is, well, guess what? The other individual who tied him up was able to escape. I mean, he's sitting in front of the lion, and now Rashi claims that he wouldn't be able to escape the lion. In the interim, his friend came along and tied him up while he was unable to escape from the lion. How is it that his friend, you know, was able to escape and he wasn't able to escape? So Rashi's distinction or claim here makes it very difficult, and the conclusion from Rashi would be that if he could escape, then you would be chayav. Because you tied him, you were the one who caused him to be unable. It's like you kept him in the water, where you've fallen into the water, and you hold him in there to drown. Or the case of the fire, we don't let him escape from the fire. So to here, you don't let him escape from the lion, so you'd be chayav, the way Rashi is reading. Tosfos makes a distinction between the lion and the yitushim. And making that distinction, Tosfos says, he says, ein chiluk, ben yitushim lari, el mashum destamari adayin lo tchilach bobo. Says, well, the difference is that the lion hasn't attacked him yet, versus the mosquitoes who have already begun to attack him. So by the mosquitoes, since they already began to attack him, and then you tie him up, the attack has already begun. So you're restricting him from leaving means that you prevent him from leaving, but there's already an attack on him. Whereas the lion is waiting to pounce on him. So when you tie him up, right, you haven't done anything yet. Yes, you are grumma because now he can't escape, but the lion hasn't begun his attack yet. So here's a very different distinction than Rashi. Rashi talks about the fact that the victim is unable to escape, but Tosfos says that it has to do with whether the attack has begun already. And then Ravashi's cool would be that Yitushim, doesn't matter. Even if the mosquitoes are already attacking, since those mosquitoes leave, and new mosquitoes come, they whistle for their friends to come, then what kills them in the end is not the mosquitoes that you tied them up with. It's new mosquitoes that come, and with regards to that, you're also a grumma, just like the lion when you tied him up, and the lion later attacks. So too, the later mosquitoes to attack, you're not responsible for, I mean, in terms of Dine Adam, you're not responsible in those cases. Now, Tosfos wants to make a description over here. We said, if you tie him up and then leave him in a place where the sun will eventually come, you are patur. What happens if you tie him up inside the house? And then you carry him outside and stick him in a place where the sun will come. So Tosfos wants to suggest, gives two answers. One, he says he's chayav. In that case, you'll be chayav. Wait, so what's the distinction? How come when you tie him up outside where he's sitting and then the sun comes, patur? You tie him up inside the house, you bring him outside, and then the sun comes, you're going to be chayav? Why should it be? So Tosfos says, well, the distinction is this. In the case, or I'm going to articulate what I think Tosfos is saying, is that in the case where you are outside, you are already standing in the location where the sun will come. The victim is already in a place where the sun will eventually come. All that you do is prevent him from leaving that location. By preventing him from leaving that location, you are simply a grumma. Because the danger is not present. The attack hasn't begun. All you're doing, he's standing there, and if he continued to stand there, the danger would come. All you're doing is preventing him from leaving. Over there, you're considered a grumma. On the other hand, when you tie him up in the house, and then bring him outside, what do you have done? When you tie him up in the house, all you've done is prevented him from leaving the house. Now, when you physically carry him and place him in the location where the sun will eventually come, it is your action that put him in the situation where the sun will eventually reach. He wouldn't have been in the way of the sun until you took him over there. Once you took him over there, that's what caused it. And Tosfos says this is like Isha'o Mishum Chitav. Eish. By Eish, we say that your actions are tied to you, or you're considered culpable for your actions, for anything that is a distinct, a koach, something that is your power. Now, Tosfos says, it doesn't matter if you lit the fire and brought the fire closer to what it consumes, or whether you brought the items that it will consume closer to the fire. So to hear, your placement of the individual into the way of the sun is like Eish. Your action now brought him closer to, you brought the kelim closer to the fire. It's the same thing here. You brought him into the way of the fire, and therefore you're going to be chayav. So Tosfos says we have sugyot that seem to disagree. Tosfos says anytime there's a sugyot disagrees, it's according to the man d'amar, Eisho mishum mimono. It's according to one who holds that Eisho is not mishum chitzav. Eish is not a din in shooting an arrow that we consider anything that leaves your hand to be as if you did it. But Eisho mishum mimono, it's a monetary punishment. So Tosfos, it's interesting. Tosfos will go a couple places in Shas, says it's according to the one who says Eisho mishum mimono. But our Gemara, based on this, that Eisho mishum chitzav, if you tied him up in the house and carried him out, you'd be chayav. On the other hand, Tosfos says, gives a second interpretation at the end of the Tosfos. He says, okay, maybe we can say that even in a case where you carry him out, you would be patur. That not only in a case where you tie him up outside are you patur, but even in the case where you take him outside from inside, you would still be patur. So that's what he says. Odi yishlef reish, t'b'chol chani yisof chama v'tzina v'ari ilavo, v'zarak tzor l'mala v'nafal l'tachar afilu kafato v'ibiyo sham patur, d'dami l'koach kochol. In the end he says it's a second derivative. And then that's, why would you be patur, even when you tie him up in the house and take him out? Because it's koach kochol, it's a derivative. Your koach is what put him outside. But you still need an outside variable, the sun, to come in and to hit him. So that we already consider to be derivative, second derivative, you're not chayav for. So Tosfos is right. So Tosfos is. Tosfos is questioning. He's back and forth whether the koach kochol, when you put him out into the sun, when you've tied him up and put him out into the sun, is that isho mishum chitav because your action brought him closer to the fire, or do you say no because the sun is not there yet, the danger is not present, as opposed to a fire that's already present. Your movement of the kelim brought them into the point of danger. Over here, the sun's not there yet. The danger is not present yet. Since the danger is not present, you're bringing him out there is still considered the koach kochol, second derivative. Hey, Tosfos is mitlabet, has a question about that, which way it goes. So far we had the list here. Now we're going to have the argument. We have a Rashi that first of all disagrees with this case of Yitushim. And now we're going to have another statement, which is, Itmar, kafalav gigit, someone who put a barrel over an individual, or paralav maziva, he's in a house and he rips the roof off, so now he's exposed to the cold. So one is he puts the barrel over him and he suffocates, or he opens up the roof while he's sleeping and then he dies from exposure. So now in this case, rav over abzeira, of machlokes, chadamar chayav, chadamar patur. One says chayav, one says patur. Tistayim the rava hu damar patur. Let's say that this rava says patur, damar rava, kafato mate birav, patur. You tie him up and he dies from starvation, you are patur. The other rabbi, tistayim the rabbi zero hu damar patur. Now let's say that rabbi zero is one says patur, damar rabbi zero. Haiman the ayile lechavre bebeta deshisha. Somebody puts his friend in a marble house. The Gemara in many places says a marble house is a place where there is no, air. It's almost like a hermetically sealed place where there is no airflow in the house. But then, adlikle sharga, and then he lit a candle in there, umet, and he dies from that, chayav. Because the candle will consume the oxygen, put out the carbon dioxide, so the candle consuming the oxygen eventually suffocates him because there's no airflow into that house. Over there he says, Rabbi Zera says, chayav, time of the adlikle sharga. It's because he lit the candle. If he did not light the candle, lo, then he would not be chayav. So putting him into a ba'id shisha and not lighting the candle is equivalent to putting a barrel over him and not doing anything else. So Gemara draws a distinction and says, I'm right. In the case of the ba'id shisha, the expanse or the area is much larger. Therefore, the suffocation does not begin immediately. There's plenty of oxygen. The person could be in there for a couple of days and it would never have an oxygen depletion and he would never suffocate. So the process of suffocation has not yet begun unless you light the candle. You light the candle, then you're ready eating, chewing up the oxygen and beginning the process of suffocation. But here, b'shate, it doesn't mean to begin immediately. Hocho, in the case of the barrel, below shraganami matchil hablo b'shate. Since the space is much more confined, therefore, the minute we put the barrel over him, the process of suffocation has already begun. Because it's just it's intensifying. The lack of oxygen is already present, it's just intensifying. So based on this, this is what I was saying to you before. Based on this, the Rabbi Zeira would suggest, you have Machlokas Rav and Rabbi Zeira, when you place a barrel over an individual, is that considered suffocating him or not? Rav says it's not suffocating. You know why, Rav? Rav says it's just like you tie him out and dars for starvation. Did the starvation begin from the moment you tied him up? Yes, because he can't eat from that moment forward. But the intensification of the starvation is what killed him. And that didn't start right away, according to Rav. That's not enough to be considered chayav. So too by the barrel. In the end, did he suffocate from being under a barrel? Yes. But it was from the intensifying loss of oxygen or increasing carbon dioxide in there that suffocated him. So that intensification, you're not going to be chayav for. That's Rav's opinion. Rabbi Zeira says that's not true. If it's intensifying from the moment that you put him in there and then it continues to intensify, then you are chayav. Because the process already begun. Even though at that moment in time he wouldn't die, but the process to begin intensifying has begun. So Rabbi Zeira would say the same thing by Rav. That's what I said to you before. It seems to me that Rabbi Zeira would argue on Rav's position here in that distinction. That by Rav and the suffocation case, since the process of suffocating and since the process of starvation began and they are intensifying, you're tying him up or you're putting him in that position, already put him into or is a maseh that has begun the process of starving him or begun the process of suffocating. In a big house, there, he clearly is not suffocating the moment you put him in there. He's fine for a long period of time. It's only much later on that the danger presents itself and then intensifies. So all that Rabbi Zeira requires is that the danger is present. And then as long as even though it takes intensification, as long as it's present, that's enough to be chayav. And that will include, you know, if you tie him up and he can't eat, you put him in a barrel and he suffocates. If the danger is not present, then even if it takes later on, it becomes, because you're tying him up, it takes time and it intensifies, that's not enough because the danger did not begin to be mafil on him, did not begin to work on him at that moment in time. And that would be his distinction between sun and sina. The sun was not present when you tied him up there and it eventually came. The cold was not there when you tied him up. So even though it intensifies, him being out in the sun for a duration is what kills him, nevertheless, the sun was not beating on him when you put him there. And therefore, according to Rabbi Zeira, that's a grama and you'll be patur in that case. Yeah. You're too paskin like Rav. It's difficult. It's not, that distinction is very hard. I told you that Rambam is very bothered. Seems to be very bothered by all of these statements. And he calls the person, he says the person's a rotzeach. V'doresh damim, yidrosh damav. It's just that he has a tour from Dinei Adam because of a technicality that it's somewhat of a grama and that we don't punish in grama over here. But just know that it's not, you're still a murderer. That's what the Rambam says. It's very clear that the Rambam's not comfortable or not happy with these fine distinctions because they are exactly that. They're fine tooth distinctions that are getting people off. But in the end, you really are killing. You know that you're killing the individual. It's you who's doing it. It's your actions in the end killed the individual, even though it's grama in these cases. Okay, now, Rava continues with these distinctions. Amar Rava. Dachafo the boar, Vusalam babor. He pushes him into a boar, and there's a ladder for him to escape from the boar. Ubacher, Vesilico. And someone else comes along and takes the ladder out. Vafiluhu, even if the individual pushed him into the boar, ran, Kadam, Vesilco, and pulled the ladder out, Patur. Debaidno de Shadio, Yachoda Alotu. Because at the moment he pushed him into the boar, the opportunity or the ability to come out of the boar was already there. So now, that's number one. The one who pushes is patur, because when he pushed, there was a way out. So he didn't kill him, because all the guy had to do was climb out of the boar, and he would have been fine. Ah, the ladder was later removed. That wasn't the situation when you pushed him. When you took your action, the situation or the circumstances were that he could have escaped. It's equivalent of what we had in our Mishnah, where you push him into the water, and he's able to get out. Or you push him into the fire, and he's able to get out. Even though he eventually dies there, you're patur, because he had the ability to escape. Now, the person who pulls away the ladder is also patur. Why? Because Why does the person die in the bore? He dies from exposure. He dies from being there over a duration of time. So you're pulling out of the ladder is the same equivalent to tying him up, right, in the place where the cold will eventually come, or tying him up in a place where the sun will eventually come. So pulling of the ladder itself is not a chiyuv mita either. So both parties or both actions are considered patur here because neither action in of itself killed him. And now, Amar Rava is a famous case. Zarak Chetz, this is what I was referring to when Tosso said before. You shoot an arrow. Tris biado. The victim has a shield that is protecting him. Uva acher v'natlo. And then someone else comes along and takes away the shield. Vafiluhu. Imrafi kadam. It was Flash Gordon. Ran over there. V'natlo. And he took it away. The tris. He took away the shield. Patur. Why? At the moment that he shot the arrow, mifsak piske gire, there was something intervening between his action and the victim. There was protection there. So now, the action that he took is considered a non-action, because when he took the action, the victim was not exposed. Later on, someone exposed the victim. All right, that wasn't, again, that wasn't the situation when he took his action. Now, the person who removes the trish is also patur, because all he did was removed a
non-essential object.
Right, he removed some protection, but he wasn't the one who shot anything that murdered him. He just removes the protection from him. It's equivalent of, again, tying him up and leaving him out in the sun. All you're doing is changing the circumstances that he's found in, but you are itself not creating the danger or the item that kills him. So when you pull the shield, the arrow, you didn't shoot the arrow. You didn't do any maaseh that is killing. You simply removed that which was protecting him. Again, you are a grama. You're the cause of what caused him to die, but you're not the direct cause of his death.
With any projectile, whether it's an arrow, a bullet, or a missile, in theory,
Mishnah said that. Our Mishnah says if he could have gotten, you have to assess, if he could have gotten out of the way, he has to know it's coming to get out of the way. Let's assume that. I mean, if you don't know, he has to be aware that he needs to move. If he's not aware that he needs to move, then you're going to be chayav because there's no reason we should have assumed he would move. People do move, but you shot with the intention of him not moving. So I'm saying that it has to be that he's aware of the situation.
He's out of range when the missile is fired, and then as the missile is making its way towards the area, he walks into
there. You would not be chayef. That's like this case here, because when you shot the missile, the person was not in the range of where you shot it to, because at the release of the missile, he wasn't there. It's equivalent of having a shield on him. So that there you would be patur. He's out of the range, and then he comes into the range. All right, now, Vamarava zarak bochets. He shoots an arrow at him. Usmanim biyado. The victim has the cure in his hand. Meaning that he has something, I don't know whether it's some magic potion that'll cure him, or whether it's just the medicinal ability to cure himself or to stop himself from dying. Ubacher upizran. After he shot the arrow, someone came and knocked the hand of the victim, or somehow disposed of the medicine or the medical treatment that would save him. Vafiluhu kadam, or even if the one who shot the arrow, Flash Gordon again, gets over there, upizran, he disperses whatever the treatment is, he gets rid of it. Patur. Why? To be either the shadibe, the moment that you shot the arrow, yecholi tava. It was not a murder, because there was high likelihood that the person would not die from this shot, because you knew that he could be treated. He had the way to treat himself, and therefore when you shot the arrow, you didn't expect him to die from that shot or that action. So later on, something happens that changes the situation, but that wasn't true at the moment you took your action. So Amar Ravashi Hilkach, Afilu Smanim Bishuk. Hey, why do you have to have it in his hand? Even if he can Smanim in the Shuk, meaning he can get to the hospital. Let's say that he has the ability to get to the hospital and cure himself or take care of himself so he does not die. And he doesn't do it, or he doesn't get there for whatever reason, you should also be patur. Because again, when you shot him, you didn't expect him to die, because the expectation was that an individual who got hurt in this manner would get to the hospital and survive. The fact that he doesn't survive is because of other variables, exogenous variables, that you weren't aware of or were not there present when you shot or you took your action. So your action was not a murder action, It was an action that should not result in murder. The fact that it does result in murder is because of changes that took place after you took your action. So Amar Le Rav Acha Bei Derav Le Ravashi, is Damno L'Smanim Mahu. It's a very interesting question. At the moment you shot the arrow, it was a shot that would kill him. You take a shot, it would kill him. But then, but after the arrow was released, all of a sudden he gets into his hand the magic potion, he gets medical treatment or an ambulance comes by, whatever the situation is, but now he has a possibility of surviving, but he doesn't. He ends up dying. So this happens, you shoot the arrow, the moment you shoot the arrow, he's gonna die. In between the time that you shoot the arrow and the time that it hits him, something happens or circumstances or context changes enough that he would survive. Either he's, you know, an ambulance comes, he gets some sort of medicine or treatment that could save him. But in the end, he's not saved for whatever reason. Is he patur or not? He says back to him that yes, he would be, a bazin would have to poter such an individual because he shouldn't have died. That's the question at hand is, whose fault is it that the individual died? True, in this case, you gave him a death blow, because when he shot the arrow, he should have died. But because there was a possibility, even after the arrow left your hand, that he should have survived, then it's no longer your fault that he died. He could have survived. The inability to survive has to do, again, with another koach, with some other force coming in and causing the problem, whether it's, you know, someone knocking out the medicine, or someone else doing something that prevents him from being cured. But your action in of itself would not have killed him. Now, there are two ways your action would not have killed him. Either because at the moment you shot it, it was not ra'oi to kill him, because he either had the medicine then or he had a tree, a shield in front of him. In that case, you will not be held accountable for murder, because when you shot it, it couldn't have killed him. The other possibility is that when you shot him, it would have killed him. But something happens in the interim that allows him to be saved. And then that item is removed. In that case, you're also patur, because he shouldn't have died from it. That's like pushing, in our mission, pushing him into the water, and he could have gotten out. But in the end, he doesn't get out. You say you pushed him into the water, and someone threw him a ring, that, and so he should have been able to get out. But for some reason, something happens, somehow he cuts his ring, or something cuts the ring, and it causes it to deflate, and he sinks from the ring. So there's some outside force that caused him to die in the end, but he was able to be saved. From the moment he's able to be saved, you're off the hook in terms of being a murderer. Again, these are all cases where you would say, rotzeachu, but he's patur. I mean, that he's a murderer, but he's patur from a technicality that happens over here. But
Deresh
Damim,
Yidrosh Damav. It's a side question. Deresh Damim, Yidrosh Damav, but is there a provision in Shas for jailing someone?
Yeah. So we've seen that before, that Chazal are able to be onshin lo min haTorah in order to prevent, if they see somebody's acting in such a manner, they can either, right, they can jail them, they can even put them to death in unusual circumstances to set a precedent or to show that this is unacceptable behavior. They see things are getting out of hand, yes, we've seen that earlier in the Masechta, yeah, that they could take action. But not min adin. That's already extra, we call them extra, outside the din types of powers that Beis Din has, to enforce or to ensure that there's compliance with the law and compliance with what would be considered civil norms. So that, yeah, they could do something, but again, this is not, he's not a rotzeach, that they're killing him because the Torah says to put him to death, killing him as a, empowered as a Beis Din, because their powers that is vested to them as a Beis Din to ensure that people act in a proper manner and keep the mitzvot, because of that, they're allowed to do it.
It's like in modern society, the jail is such a huge concept.
It clearly has cases where you have kovenot to b'kiva, but you have to remember also that they have corporal punishment, which today we don't do. I mean, that they were, okay, they didn't put him in jail, but he got lashes. There was a physical punishment that he was given that should dissuade him from doing it again. As opposed to today, where we take no physical action against him, so the only thing is to incarcerate him to prevent the individual or make him feel like it's not worthwhile to do it again. That would be a big distinction between them. And even if they don't get Malchus Minotaurah, you can have Malchus Midrabanan. There is a concept that they can be Masrinoto when they feel that it's out of line. So again, I think that distinction is very important when you look at modern day jail versus what they had. If they had the ability to give Malchut, then they could create a dissuasion or a reason not to do it again without incarcerating him. Right now, Amar Rava Zarak Tzur Bekotel. Someone throws a rock or a pebble at the wall, and then it rebounds, ricochets off the wall, Chayav. And it kills your chayav, because that's your koach. Your power is what caused it to ricochet. I mean, it's the laws of physics here. The wall contributed nothing to the power of the rock. And by your throwing with that type of force, you have to expect the rock to ricochet or bounce off the wall. And therefore, if it kills, you are chayav. It's all your koach.
And he says here that you were misguided initially to kill the person.
Yes. Yes.
The wall.
Well, that we're going to see in a second. Vetani Tuna. Kagon Elu Amisachakim Bikadur. So this is a game of ball. If they intentionally killed someone when they played, we call it like elimination, Neragin, they're going to be put to death. Shogeg Golin, and Shogeg they'll be put into Galut. Shogeg Golin, well, if they're Shogeg, of course they're put into Galut. Pshita. No, it says, Vemezid Neragim. That's the Chedeshir. It's Trichle, Malutema Hatrat Safeki. I would have thought it's Hatrat Safek because who knows if the throw will have the force to kill him. The answer is, in the end, no, because you intend to throw with that type of force, and since you're throwing with that type of force, right, then we say, miyemer dehadra, so who says it's going to ricochet, kamash balan, that when you throw with that type of force, it's going to rebound, you have to know that it's going to rebound, and you're intending to kill him. So the game, according to Rashi, this game of Kadur, is that the first person throws the ball against the wall, as we're going to get to in a second, he throws the ball against the wall, and then it goes far away. Then the second individual grabs the ball, and as soon as the moment he gets the ball, the first individual is allowed to run away. It's like almost like bases. You throw the ball against the wall, and then you're allowed to run the bases until the other person has the ball. So the first one's allowed to run away until the second guy gets the ball. As soon as the second guy gets the ball, everybody freezes, and the second guy's allowed to throw the ball at the first person. And he's trying to eliminate him, but obviously not kill him, but to eliminate him. That's the game over here. So now, if the person throws with intention, with the power of intention to kill, but it certainly is chayaf when he throws the intention to kill him. Now, if he throws it at the wall, again, the first player throws it at the wall so hard with intent, knowing with intent that he will kill the second player when he hits him, or he gets to the ball, or the ball hits him, then he's also chayaf. And that's what we're saying over here. That's still considered kocho. That is his power. Because there's nothing there that changed changed the power that he put it there, or increased the power that he put it there. The power is just a law of physics. If you throw something hard at a wall, it will bounce off the wall, and it's all your koach that's doing that. So because of that, you are chayav. So Tani Rav Chalifa Bar Ma'arva Kamei De Rabbi Avu Kagon Eilu Amisachakim Bekadur. Like these people play ball. Shargo Argu Toch Arba Amot Patur. They kill within 4 amot, they're patur. Chutz the 4 amot chayav. Outside of 4 amot, they are chayav. So this is a very hard gemara. The question is, what is the gemara saying? Patur and chayav from what? So I'm going to read it. The first way we read it is galut. This is the way Rashi reads it, the first interpretation Rashi, and the first interpretation of Tosfot, where he agrees with Rashi. And that's because we have in other places, for instance, by a person who was intended to throw 4 amot, and only threw 3 amot, and then he ended up killing an individual. He intended to throw it 4, but it went 2. He's patur mi galut. That's it. We have a pasuk that says you're patur from galut in that case because your intention was not carried out. You were trying to throw 4 and it went to 2. Therefore, you are patur mi galut. So same thing over here. You're intending to throw it hard and it will go back far. If it ends up hurting within the first 4 amot, that was not your intention. That's not what you intended. You wanted the ball because the game, and we're going to see this in a second, what's the name of the game? The name of the game is to get the ball as far out as possible. So when you throw, your intention is to get the ball far out. If it falls within the first 4 amot, that's not what you intended when you threw the ball. So that's what Rashi and Tosfot had to explain the Gemara. So we'll read it now. So that, Toch 4 amot patur, Chutz 4 amot chayav, Amalei Ravina Ravashi, Hei Chidami, what's the case here? If he wants to kill him, and he wants to kill him, then afilu portunami. Then even within the first 4 amot, he'll be chayav. If he wants to kill him, he's aiming for him, why does it matter where he's stealing? If he doesn't want to kill him, afilu tuvanami. If he's further out, he shouldn't be chayav, because he didn't tell him to kill. So Mar says, Amalei, Stam misachakim bikadur, Kama de Azle mine nechatvei, or mecha nechalei. That the way the game, or the nature of the game, is that the further it goes, the better. So therefore, your intent when you throw is for the ball to come back with the maximum force to go back as far as possible. So therefore, if you kill within the first 4 amot, that was not your intention. Your intention is to throw the ball as hard as possible, even though you're throwing with intent to kill, but your intent is to kill something, someone much farther back because you're trying to get the ball as far back as possible. Whereas if it kills in the first four amot, that is, even though you're intending to kill, that was not your intention at that time. Because, for instance, we had before, if you intended to throw four amot and you only threw two, there you're also not chayav galut. So also over here, you intended to throw 20 amot off the wall, and instead it lands at four amot off the wall. That's not what you intended. That's not how you play the game. So that's why Rashi and Tosafot explain the in the Gemara.
Chopping wood, right? A piece of the metal or whatever, something flies off, a piece of the wood flies off.
There, by the case of the Gazin, you should have taken into consideration, splinters do fly off, or the metal does fly off the axe, and therefore you have to consider when you're chopping wood, who's around you, who's in the context that's there.
In order to create the force to chop wood, right, by definition, there are sparks
or splinters
that fly off.
Yes, so you, by the fact that you didn't check that there was nobody in the area, that's why you're considered a shokeg. Over here, your intent is to have the ball go much further. You didn't think about anybody being in the first four amot because you didn't think the ball was going to land in that first four amot. You thought the ball was going to be way further out, even though you're intending to kill. But you didn't intend to kill within the first four amot. You intended to kill in the normal way that the game is played, which is have the ball go much further out. If it's not foreseeable, then you may not be chayav galut. If it's foreseeable, then we ask you to prevent it and say, that's why you're shogeg and not an onus. I mean, that's the difference. Shogeg is that it could have been prevented. Onus is that it was unpreventable or unexpected. All right, so now, Gemara says, the Gememra, to say, to kayagavna kofu. The basic premise here is that the throwing against the wall and ricocheting off the wall is considered kochol. Now, that was explained again according to Rashi and Tosafot, who say that it's galut. We're talking about galut here. Rashi brings a second interpretation, which Tosafot in the beginning says, I can't believe anybody would say this. He says, no, we're talking about murder here. Chayav and patur are your rotzeach b'mezid. Are you chayav or patur? Tosafot says, I don't understand. If he's intending to kill, right, and why should it matter? And they warned him, your throw is going to kill. When you throw it against the wall, it has enough force to kill someone. If your throw is on target, it will kill. So then why should be patur if it lands within four amot? They warned him. He knew. He says, Alpha Bikain, I'm throwing it, that it's going to kill. So why should he be patur if it's within four amot? So that's why Tosus goes with Rashi's first shot. Tosus later comes back around to Rashi's second shot and says, maybe you can explain it. It's based on the Gemara. I said to you before, there's a Gemara that says that if you try to throw four and instead you throw two, right, that you are patur. So that's why over here you'd also be patur. So Tosus says there's an additional, there's a girsa that says you are chayav galut in that case. That the case where you throw four and it goes two instead, you are actually chayav galut in that case. So now, if that's the case that you're chayav, our brisa here can't be talking about galut. Because according to that, where you, that girsa in the Gemara over there would mean here, when you threw it against the wall and it hit within four amot, you should also be chayav galut. So it must be, it's talking about murder over here, that he killed him. Tosos' original question. Well, Tosos' original question was that you are, if you throw with intent to kill and they warn you about it, why should be patur within dalat amot? So the Ran says, the Ran over here says that the problem is that the Atra went like this. They said, if your aim is on, then your ball that you throw will kill. If your aim is, will be fine. But if your aim is off, then you will even kill someone within the first four amot. If your aim is on, you'll be fine and your ball will go far away and no one hurt. But if your aim is off, you end up killing someone. He goes, I don't care, I'm throwing it. But when he threw it, right, what was his intent? His intent was it to be on, aim on. So since his intent was to be aim on, then even though he says, I'm throwing it anyway, knowing the possibility that if he was off, it would kill, that's still not considered intent for murder. His intention was to have the ball go as far away as possible, not for it to be off target. When it goes off target, even though he's warned about it being off target, that's not considered intent because his intention, even his warrant, does not match with that. That's why the Ran explains it. On the other hand, I think it's the Aruch Lener or the other Ramah explains that the problem here is it's a trot suffix. There's a suffix in that trot. If he's on target, he won't kill anybody. If he's off target, then he will kill. So what are they going to say to him? Listen, if it hits within the, if you're off target, it will kill him in the Adar Amot. So he'll go, well, off of Pekin, I'm throwing it. He's not throwing it with the intent to be off target. He's throwing it with the intent to be on target. So because of that, it becomes a trot suffix. Because we're not sure that he'll be off target. So when they warn him, they're warning about something that is not certain. And therefore it's classified as a trot suffix. So that's the alternative pshat here in our Gemara, is about whether it's talking about murder instead of galut. And Tosfos is, and Rashi bring this as a second interpretation, and you'll have to explain, based on that, you'll have to explain why within four amot you patur, outside of four amot you chayav. So again, we suggested two reasons, because the Ran says, your intent is to have it go further, and therefore when it's off, that's not your intention, so you're not classified as a murderer. And there, the Aramah says it's a hatrat safek, so there's some sort of technicality problem here, which is that you can't be brought to din because you can't have a real hatra over here, at least according to one who says hatrat safek, lo shmei hatra. So now the Gemara challenges this. Is it really true when you ricochet, it's considered your koach? Why? Vermini, I have a question about that. Ha-mikadesh. Mikadesh over here is talking about parad, you're making the mechatat, the waters of chatat, we have to sprinkle the ashes into the water. So you have a mayan, you have a spring, and you take the water and you put them into some sort of bucket or some sort of in-ground encapsulation that holds the water. And then you sprinkle the ashes into that water. So now I'm a kadesh. He wants to sprinkle the ashes. Benafal, kidusha yado. When he was sprinkling the ashes, some of them landed on his hand, and we're thinking it bounced off his hand and went into the bucket or into the sugar. Oh, atzad. Or some of the ashes fell when he was throwing them in. It fell on the side of the bucket and then fell in and ricocheted in. Rakakal nafal l'shoket. Pasul. All these cases, you're pasul. Wait a minute. Now, that sounds exactly like our case. When you throw the ball at the wall and it ricochets, the rock at the wall and it ricochets, that's considered your koach. So over here too, when you throw the ashes and you're placing them into the shoket, into the receptacle that's holding the water, when you throw the ashes, you're intending for them to go in. And when you hit your hand and it bounces in, or if you hit the kli and it bounces in, that's your considered kocho. And that's all we require here, that you put them in the kocho. So why is it the ricochet over here considered not to be your koach? Whereas by the murder, it is considered your koach. So Mar says, wait a minute, achol ma'askinan bishotet. No. They didn't fall in because of your original throw. Ashes, when you were throwing them, fell onto the back of your hand. Then later on, when you're moving around, they fall off the back of your hand into the receptacle. Or the same thing by the back of the bucket. Originally, they hit the back of the bucket, and they were stuck there. And then when you moved the bucket around, they fell in afterwards. So again, there's another koach or something else that came in that allowed them to drop in. Tashma. Machat sheyanu tunal cheres. You have a needle that is on top of a kli cheres. And then you're sprinkling mechatat. You're sprinkling the para aduma, you're sprinkling the mechatat on it to make it tahor from tumat meit. So now, what happens? Safek ala machat hiza, safek ala cheres hiza. Umitza alea. Right, so then we got on him. Hazato psul. So we don't know, when you sprinkled, we're not sure if you got right on, directly the sprinkle went on the needle, or did your sprinkle hit the kli cheres that it was sitting on? Did it hit the clay utensil was sitting on it and bounce off the clay and hit the needle? So now the Gemara says over here, well, pasul, doesn't work. Whoa, why should it be? We just said that ricochet is considered kocho. So why should it make a difference whether you sprinkle directly on the needle or you sprinkle on the cheres and it bounces off the cheres onto the needle? Both of those should be classified as kocho. So Amar Rav Chinin Abar Yehuda Mishmei Derav Matzah Itmar. Don't write mitzah, that it bounced off the cheres and hit the needle. We're not sure if it landed directly on the needle, bounced off the cheres and went off the needle, but rather, matzah, aleh azato pasul. Matzah here, it's not mitzah, but rather matzah. He found it on it. So when he found it on it, we're not sure how it got there. Meaning that, did it originally fall on the needle? And that's why it's there. Or, did it originally land on the kli cheres? And then roll or drip off the kli cheres onto the needle. Not because of the force of your sprinkling that it hit the kli cheres and then go onto the needle. That for sure would be okay. But when you throw it on the kli cheres and it drips down and lands on the needle. Or it's on an incline or decline and the water flows down and then lands on the needle. That's not kocho. Because there it took something else, another variable to make it go on the needle. So that's where it says hazato pasul and does not undermine our position that ricochets are considered your koach. So now, Amar Rav Papa, Haimon de Kafte le Chavre, person ties up his friend, Vashkal Ale Bidka de Mayo, he opens up a water, some sort of water flow or hose on him, Gire di Dehu, that is your arrows and you are Chayav. So the assumption here is that he opens up the hose He ties him up and he opens up the hose. As soon as he turns on the water, and the water goes directly on the individual. When you turn it on, that water goes directly on the individual. You are chayav because it's considered as if it's your koach. It's your power that turned it on or put the water there. Aval, that's only true. It was your koach itself that caused it. Aval b'koach sheni, grom b'almu. But if there requires an additional force to work on the water for him to be killed, then you are not chayav. So what's a case like that? So Rashi distinguishes the case where it's giri delay is a case where shemayim begabayim b'koach rishon miyad. As soon as that, right away, you put him right on the edge of the ocean, safa midron, and it's a decline or an incline. So therefore, it's for sure. As soon as the water comes over the edge, it's going to drown him because it's right there. He's right there. The water's going to land right on him. Otherwise, but what's koach sheni? Is that he put him a little distance away from the water. So the water doesn't fall on him right away, right, when it leaves the boundaries or when the hose is turned on, but rather it flows to that area. So for instance, the water goes flowing out, and then it kind of runs downstream, and then lands on him, or then hits him. So over there, that's koach sheni. Your koach only brought the water out. Later on, if the water continues to flow from that point forward, that's another koach, that the water's flowing. The water's flowing, or something's happening with the water, that's already koach sheni, and that's groma, and there you'd be patur. It's a big distinction, says big halachic nafkaminot, in many areas of halacha, what is considered koach rishon, what's considered to be assigned to you as your action, versus what is considered to be koach sheni, right, considered to be secondary koach. So it's very, like, interesting, for instance, washing it netilat yadayim. Imagine netilat yadayim, we put it into a cup, and then we pour it on our hands, because you need koach adam, you need koach adam to pour it on the hands. And we do it mitoch kli, there are all sorts of requirements. But why turning on the tap onto your hand is not classified as koach adam in that case? We don't classify it as being your koach. It might be in other areas of halacha, you would assign him some sort of culpability, but in terms of here, we don't consider koach adam to be when you turn on the hose, or turn on the water, that you're pouring the water on your hand. You're stopping, because it's turning the water. Again, here, it's not turning on the hose, but the water's already flowing, and you turn the direction towards him. The hose is already on, and then you turn the hose towards him. So over there, it's your koach, your movement of the hose is what actually does it. So therefore, that's what kills him. As opposed to when you turn on the tap, if you just pulled away the tap open and close the tap, that's not considered your koach necessarily. According to this explanation, then, simply removing the bitko and letting the water out is not sufficient to create a koach rishon. And that's why when you turn on the tap for netilat yadayim, it doesn't do anything. Because simply removing an obstacle is not koach rishon. You actually have to move or direct the water, and that's what creates the koach rishon, because your directing of the water means that that's the maaseh that you did that created the killing, as opposed to once it hits the ground and then flows on. So even though you directed the water, moved the water, the flowing of the water has nothing to do with you. So that's one way to explain it. The Yad Ramah on Sanhedrin actually draws a different distinction over here about why this is different than, for instance, shooting an arrow and then pulling away the trees and then pulling away the shield afterwards versus over here. What are you doing? You're simply pulling away the trees that lets the water come out. So how are these two cases different? So the Yad Ramah explains that the difference is that by the case of the trees and the arrow, when you shot the arrow, all the power that's in that arrow was already set in motion. Your removing of the trees or leaving the trees there has no impact on the velocity or the arrow itself. As opposed to here by the water, when you pull away the bitka, when you pull away the block that allows the water to flow out, you've actually now allowed the velocity or the koach of that water to come out. So he says that the first waters that come out are actually your koach. Your removal of the bitka allows that velocity to intensify, or the direction of the water to intensify. And therefore, that's classified as koach rishon. After the first waters have come out, then that's not true anymore, because now it's the water flowing is coming from the waters that are upstream that are flowing out over here. But based on that, the Yad Ramah would say that if you turned the tap on and off, not if you just turn the tap on, but every time you turn the tap on, that first water that comes out is koach rishon. So maybe in that instance, you could wash your dime from the tap based on opening it up and closing it each time. But again, it's only the first water is classified as being the koach adam. But you could do that by turning it on and off. So bidi evid, if there's a situation like that, then we encourage a person to do it by turning on and off the water, not simply putting their hands into the water, but turning on and off, or cupping in their hands and putting out the other hand, just to ensure that there really is a koach adam over here.
All right. Now,
Ramar Papa. And just like here, by Netilat Yadayim, these Yisyad Ramon and Koch Rishon, Koch Sheni have major nafkaminot. They also have nafkaminot in Halacha L'Maaseh. I brought down, I'll send to you, a number of tshuvot that come from Tzvi Pesach Frank and from Rav Avadya Yosef about exactly these issues. For instance, on Shabbos, opening up doors, opening up windows that allow wind in, that causes some sort of Melechet Shabbos or something to happen. Do we assign that to you, that action to you? Or is it already considered grumma, and therefore it's detached from you? Or questions, for instance, by a plata, setting a plata up on a timer. How do we assign to you the action of placing an item on the plata before it comes on, or having the item, or having the plata come on at a certain point of time? Again, that koach rishon, koach sheni. Other questions are, for instance, lighting candles on Shabbos by not lighting candles, but rather turning on an electric switch. Is turning on the electric switch considered a maase adam or not? And that has to do with two other interesting issues, which is for milking cows on Shabbos. For instance, can you set them up into these special electronic types of milking machines that come on a timer? Is that considered koach adam, or is there a koach groma in between them? Also questions with regards to mayim chaim on Shabbos, hot water on Shabbos, when you open up the tap and the boiler fills with water. Is that considered, if opening up the tap is not considered koach adam, then the fact that you open the tap and new water comes in, is that culpability assigned to you or not assigned to you? And the last question that Rabbi Yosef does, which is a big issue, is about whether it's considered or classified as lishma when you turn on a machine. For instance, making matzot for the first night of Pesach. When you turn on the machine, is that considered koach adam and lishma is assigned to you for the entire duration of the machine working? Or is it only for the first instance when the machine works that that's considered lishma? And based on that, Rav Avadya Yosef, our sugi over here, wants to say that it's preferable to use hand shmura matzah on the first night of Pesach because of this question of whether it really can be assigned that action to you. I'll send you the tshuvot so you can take a look at them and see how our sugi really comes to life in modern day questions.
Zerach shvor l'malo, someone throws something straight up in the air, v'chalit tzadim, but it doesn't come straight back down, v'arga, and then killed, chayav, you are chayav. Tzamalei mar baravashi l'ar papa, my time. Why should you be chayav? Mishum de kochu? It was because of his power? I mean, you're making this equivalent to the case of the ricochet. You throw something against the wall, your strength of your throw bounces off the wall, and that's what causes the damage, or the killing. Therefore, you're chayav. Over here, where you throw it up, so you're going to say the same thing. Oh, you threw it up, and now it comes back down. It's your koach that did it. That's not true. Because ikochov, it was your strength, teza leel, it should keep going up. It should continue to fly up. By the case of the wall, physics dictate that there's a wall there, and you throw it against the wall, you know it's going to ricochet off the wall. Over here, if you threw it up, it should free from your koach, it should continue to go up. Why does it come down? It's because of gravity. Gravity is what pulls it back down. Since gravity is what pulls it back down, it's no longer your koach. It's no longer your koach that's bringing it down, but rather gravity that's bringing it down. It's not the power of your, it's not the velocity of your throw which brings it down. If the velocity of your throw is acting against gravity, it's over there by the wall, you throw it, it's your velocity that determines where the ball is going to go and where it's going to fly out from the wall. Over here, the velocity, how you throw up will not determine whether it comes back down or not. It comes back down because of gravity, nothing to do with the way you threw it. So, Ella, so if that's the case, why when it goes to the side? So, Elab Kochoho Tizel Latachat. So, Rav Papa responds to him and says, wait a minute, if you're right, that has nothing to do with this koach, then the ball should come straight down. Come absolutely straight down. Because all you did was throw it up, and gravity pulls down. Why is the ball not coming exactly down? It's going to the side? That's because of your koach. So it's very interesting. There, that is your koach. So the vertical up and down motion, your motion's only up. The motion down is gravity. The horizontal motion from side to side, that has nothing to do with gravity. That is your motion. So even though you threw up very high and it comes down 1 foot from you and it does damage or kill someone there, you're chayav. Not for the up and down, but for the fact that it moved to your right, a foot. That's your action. It says, Ela koach kachushu. It's a lighter form of koach. It's his koach that's moving it from side to side. And that koach is enough to be mechayev him, according to Rav Papa, to be mechayev him as being his fault or his koach over here, as opposed to up and down, where we would not classify it as being his koach, because the gravity is what brings it down, and therefore his koach would have had to go out to outer space. The fact that it comes back down has to do with gravity and not his koach, and therefore he won't be held culpable. Okay, we'll stop over here.